Standard Time. Scott Spears back here along with Satch Sullinger. Satch, Mr. McFeely has arrived.
Yes, he has. I'm excited to listen to it.
When you were growing up, Mr. Rogers started in 1968. What are your memories of that show?
Well, in 1968, I was 19 years old. I didn't pay too much attention to it, but I tell you what, when I started having kids, I did. And they used to watch Mr. Rogers. It's good. What's good in the neighborhood, and you learn to watch it with enthusiasm with your kids. And so the message was always about sharing. It was always about listening. It was always about it's okay to make mistakes. So it was something that you always enjoyed your child watching.
That show had a run that went through 2001. What do you think it says about a show that it can have a run like that?
Well, exactly what I just said.
Yeah.
You know, there was no parents fighting watching Mr. Rogers. There was no violence. It was all about, it was all child-oriented. It was all, you know, geared, you know, at the end of the show, your child was asking some pretty pertinent questions for their age, and they were learning how to become a part of things. And I think his show really should have been called All Day Pre-Kindergarten. You know what I mean? I mean,
absolutely.
That's exactly what pre-kindergarten does now, is all the things that he was doing every day with young people on TV.
As an educator, where do you think that show ranks in the pantheon of Sesame Street and Reading Rainbows?
Right up there with Sesame Street. I think Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street are you know, one's number one and one's number two. And being number two or number one is over an era like that is equally the same to me. I think it was very, very educational. I mean, it even helped parents become better parents, because there's no guide for being a parent. Parent is on the job training. And when you become a good parent for an infant, guess what? They turn to a toddler.
Mm.
And when you become a good parent for a toddler, they become moving in school age. And so we always have to adjust. And I think that Mr. Rogers really helped us become better parents.
What do you think? Do you think a show like that could survive today?
Yeah, but it would have to adapt itself to this mass media thing and make those necessary adjustments. But, you know, back then, you know, cable was real low key, and, you know, we didn't have cell phones, and, you know, everything was like dinner was dinner, and now everything's instant gratification. And, you know, I see truck drivers going down the highway in semis texting, and I'm going, oh my God. I mean, I have a hard time stopping my car. How am I going to stop a semi? You know what I mean? So everything's instant right now. And I just, you know, it'd be hard to survive today.
Is television ever going to go back to a day, or is it the internet age now?
I think it's the internet age now. And I think it's hard. It would be hard to go back from what we have now. What we have to do is learn how to adapt in the internet age. And the one thing about the internet that really is lacking is, before the internet, we used to have conversations like you and I are having now, where we looked each other in the eye and held a conversation. Internet, you know, people are interacting and never seeing the person, might not even know the person that they're interacting with. And so, you know, people are losing their interpersonal skills. And maybe, I can't blame that on Donald Trump, because he didn't come through it. But, I mean, you know, Donald Trump would be pretty much the norm 10, 15 years from now.
Well, and how are we going to do interviews then? How are we going to do that when we have no interpersonal communication, when we can't do this?
Well, you know, the people that are going to interview are going to go to college to learn how to interview. The interviewer... the interviewee, I mean, is the one that's going to really need some help. You know, they have classes today for people on how to be interviewed and how to answer, and, you know, holding your hands here, and, you know, you bring them apart to make a point, but you never bring them too far apart, and you never bring them up over to your face, and you know, just like, I mean, little training things like that. I mean, I received my master's in sports administration, and one thing I had to go through was the camera part, where, you know, how to act on the camera, you know, and those little things that we had to do, and about our hands and things like that.
Why was that important?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, you're reaching out to the media. I mean, to the public. The public's not reaching out to you, and so, you know, if you have something you want to share with the public, then you have to do it in a way that the public is ready to receive it. And if you don't make the adjustments, you may have a lot to say, but no one cares about what you're saying.
What do you think the future holds when it comes to food service jobs, waiters and waitresses? You know, when I go into the grocery store, all the checkers have out their cell phones mm-hmm. in between checking the food.
Mm-hmm.
When there is a generation that knows nothing else but that, because we haven't got there yet, this is just something that has come in. When that generation right now, that I would say is probably 13, 14, when they become 18, 19, 20, what are you going to get when you go into a grocery store as a customer?
Well, I think it's just like what I claimed last hour about the Republican Party. You know, they're learning how to adapt and to become the new GOP. I think that's what's happening with, you know, the stores and service industry. You know, they're letting the technology exist at the same time evaluating, and rules and regulations are going to be written sooner or later. Like driving and texting, sooner or later they're going to have technology in a car that where your cell phone won't text or receive a text while your engine's on. Like, they have phones connected now to when I get in my car. Once I start my car, my phone goes through my speaker, so I don't ever have to touch the phone to answer it. Okay? Well, if they can do that, then they can also shut it down while the key's on. And that's not a bad thing. I don't think that would be a bad thing.
When we are, do you think the internet will ever be regulated? Because that's one of the big arguments going on right now. And should we regulate it?
Well, it should be regulated to some point about lies, posting, knowing that you're posting a lie, blatant lies. Attacking people and bullying people, yeah, that kind of regulation. But the freedom of speech, and then there's where the fine line is. Freedom of speech, you know, if you can't take that away, no one owns the internet. I mean, it's free access, and you know, I don't know what the answer is, but believe me, we have to do something, because if we don't, it's really getting out of hand.
Is the internet a personal thing, or is the internet a broadcast medium?
No, it depends on the individual. When you look on there, you see people post what they have for breakfast, what they have for lunch, what they're getting ready to do, what kind of shoes they're wearing. Those people are all about themselves. They need attention. Hey, here I am. They're the kind of walk into a room and have to announce I'm here. Some people use it, like me. I use it to provoke thought, to hopefully stimulate acceptance of all. That's how I use it.
You know, it's very interesting, Satch, because television, radio were the two broadcast entities that are still governed by the Federal Communications Commission.
Mm-hmm.
There are words we cannot say right now. Mm-hmm. They've told us what they are.
Mm-hmm.
There are things we can't do. The internet is not that way. But even if you had a public access television station or a personally owned television station or radio station, you still can't say those words, even though it's personal use.
Right.
Not the same with the internet.
Right.
So should we?
No.
No. It should always be left open.
Right.
Why is it that all the shows that use profanity always win the Emmy Awards? Is that a better reflection of real life than broadcast television?
You know, that's a good point. when I can see something that I can relate to, it's going to draw my attention. And the profanity is closer to what we're really, like you step outside in that lobby, you're going to hear some profanity. You go outside that door, you're going to hear it. I think profanity is just part of who we are, and it makes us, it gets our attention, and because it gets our attention, I won't see it again. Like, remember when R-rated movies first came out? You know, you saw a girl, you know, trying to get undressed, and I mean, you don't know what the movie was about, but I'm going to the next R-rated movie. You understand? Till they start having some substance behind the movie, and then you start watching it. But before, we just started watching because we could see things we'd never seen before. You know, Ozzie and Harriet, when I was coming up, the Nelsons, they slept in separate beds. They were the ideal husband and wife, but they slept in separate beds. I can remember the first time I saw a man and woman get in the bed together. I got to watch this again. But after that initial shock wears off, I think we start looking for the meat of the substance. You got me? And I think that the internet is going through the, you know, it's different than what I've normally seen, and I can do it. But then eventually we're going to start looking for substance. You know, what am I doing here? What is the purpose of this? Right now people are just getting on there, just doing anything they want. And I think that's just the embryonic stages of it.
It used to be, I remember when broadcast television had more money to spend on a program, and they were able to put all this money into it, and they got the best actors, and they had the best writers, and they were putting out good shows. And then all of a sudden, HBO started doing these lower budget shows.
Mm-hmm.
But they were able to use profanity because HBO was a different, it was a pay, you have to pay to get it.
Right.
Yeah. And they were able to show things on there, people maybe not dressed as much as they could be.
Right.
And those shows all started to win the Emmys. Now, I never felt that they were better written, mm-hmm, or had better actors, but when people voted, those shows got the Emmys, like The Sopranos.
Right, right. Well, that goes to reiterate what I was saying. We're going to have to make some drastic changes here on this internet because it's such a valuable tool. And if we don't make some changes, then we're going to waste a very important part of our society. I mean, let's look at it, you know, from a point of view where, when I was coming up, you went out, you filled out applications, you went out and got yourself a job. Now, in this society, because of the internet, people are creating their own jobs on the internet. People are creating their own markets through the internet. There's no one's going out filling out applications anymore. You know, people are working from home now and creating their own business from at home. And so, you know, the internet is such a valuable tool now. And it's not like it was when I was coming up. You know, you had all these factories in Columbus, and you used to go apply at a factory job. Westinghouse, Buckeye Steel, Owens, Illinois, Timken, Roller Bear, you know, Malabar. You know what I mean? You go to those places and get a job. And that's where you first got started. Well, it's not like that anymore. It's totally different. And so, the internet is wide open. It should be governed, but it shouldn't be controlled.
Can you teach on television using things that represent a certain way of life, maybe a more provocative way of life than the, maybe what they call cookie cutter educational shows? I think it's interesting. Sesame Street's going to HBO.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that will change the show? I know I talked to Bob McGrath on the telephone not too long ago, and he said the show today is not what it was when he started.
Right.
Will the move to HBO change it even more?
Yeah, because they're going to have less restrictions, and they're going to be able to bring young people into the reality of their world, because even as your world and my world has changed, so has the kids. You know, it's totally different from when I was a kid. we have young people that have, here's an example of what I mean. We have young people that have lost their lives over a toy gun that looks so real today, to where when I was coming up, you've got a twig from a tree, and that was my gun. And it went, I'd have to go bang, bang. Well, these things now sound like they're firing. So there's an example of how drastic things have changed for the better and for the worse. You know, it looks like a real gun. It promotes guns. I wonder who behind that idea. At the same time, it's promoting violence. You got me? But here's the main thing. It's eliminating creativity. Our young people don't have any more creativity. Everything is planned, projected, safe. Everything's planned out for them. When I came up, you know, we created games. You know, like, you know, step on a crack, you break your mama's back. You know, we go out and try to run and not step on a crack. And we play cars. We'd sit on the front porch and it's your turn. Now, whatever car comes down, that's your car, whether it was a clunker or a Pontiac or a Chevy. You got me? And then we'd write down our cars. At the end of the day, hour later, who had the best car? You know what I mean? This internet is in the way kids are now, they have no creativity. And when we came up, we had to be creative.
When I talked to Bob McGrath from Sesame Street, he said something interesting. He said in Africa, they did a show on homosexuality and AIDS on Sesame Street in Africa, mm-hmm. because it's produced differently over mm-hmm. there. Do you think we could do that on Sesame Street in America?
It all depends on the projection of homosexuality. I know in Africa, homosexuality is a negative thing, and so it was portrayed in a negative way. In America, homosexuality is not considered a negative way, way of life. It's different than mine, but I accept, just like my being a heterosexual is different from a homosexual. It doesn't make me any better or them any worse or vice versa. So we have to watch how we present it. In Africa, they could present it the way they wanted to because they were meeting the needs of that community or that country. Here, if we did it in an educational form, but is AIDS a homosexual disease? I don't think so. It was introduced to us as a homosexual disease, but it's not a homosexual disease.
Do you think it is right for a show like Sesame Street to deal with that?
Not in America, but maybe in Africa, if that's what Africa wants. See, I can't judge Africa because I don't live in Africa. I can only judge America because I live in America. For me to attempt to judge Africa for being Africa would be like the lady in Kentucky forcing my beliefs on someone else.
If we did the show on a mommy and a mommy and a daddy in America for the generation who are 4, 5, 6, 7 years old now, when they become the adults, does that make a difference?
I think it was time to do that because we have mommies and mommies and daddies and daddies. I mean, one of the best weathermen in the state of Ohio is Chris Bradley. Chris Bradley is an openly gay man that got married and has adopted a son and a daughter. His son and daughter live with a dad and dad. And I think for them to feel whole and holistic, it'd be good for them to see themselves in a positive way on TV. Because where do they go to see themselves? So that has to have something negative going on in their head. So, yeah, I think that it would be good for them to be able to see themselves, the kids, to see themselves in a positive way. Not say that Chris and Chris's husband or wife I don't know which role is what. Not for them, because they're grown. They've accepted who they are, and we have accepted them, and they know that they're okay. But their kids coming up, they see every other kid, not every kid from a heterosexual relationship, they see their lives on TV, but they never see their lives. And so that's almost like a kiss of death right there, of negativity, that something's wrong. And there's nothing wrong with those kids. They're the two parents who love them to death.
You know, it's interesting, though, because when you say openly gay, now he is the weatherman on the number one newscast in Columbus, Ohio, Chris Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
But I would venture to say that 80% of the audience who watches that program, when you just said that over the airwaves, does not know that he's openly gay. So I don't know how openly he is. Now, I know if you follow his Facebook,
Right. Well, that's open. That's open.
But to an older generation that makes you the number one broadcast, and though a lot of those people are not on the internet, and a lot of people don't follow him on the internet, I bet you more people in his audience don't know than know.
Well, they need to know.
But because
if there is an impact, it's because of their projection on him, on their shortcomings of acceptance, because up to this point, if they thought he was doing a great job as a weatherman, just because he's gay doesn't mean that the weather job changed.
But you know, it's interesting, though, when they're talking there, and it's Kristen Hartman and Jerry Revish, if somebody said to Jerry, what are you and your wife doing this weekend, do you think in 2015 they could turn to Chris and say, what are you and your husband doing on the broadcast medium that is the conservative WBNS?
Well, if he can't, they should. Chris announced his marriage on WBNS, and I'm so proud that he was able to do that and to feel whole, because why shouldn't he be able to feel whole?
Well, it's interesting.
And then on Facebook, I'm on Facebook, and you know, he had pictures of his wedding with his significant other, and I was so proud and happy that he could do that and go back to work the next day. Because I know I came through a time when if he did that, his next day he'd have come to work, his stuff would have been sitting out in the parking lot. And not being right, but that was the reality. And so I'm just so proud that they can do it. And so those that aren't on the internet, those that aren't on Facebook, that are in my earshot of my voice right now, it tells me that you need to get connected. And it also tells me that you're not talking to your younger people and your family, because they know. And so you maybe should have better, healthy conversations at dinner time or at family time about life, not about what's safe or what's not, you know, just discussing what's safe, you know, to broach these subjects and to grow. Because if you just found out that Chris Bradley was gay by my voice on this radio, means that you haven't been connected. Because I think everyone in here, in this, because we're all on the media here, otherwise you couldn't be a good radio host.
Right.
We all knew. We all knew about the wedding. We all seen pictures of the wedding. We seen pictures of him, his significant other, and his children. We seen them on the first day of school, taking them to school, the whole nine yards. I mean, why shouldn't their kids, it goes back to what's it, why shouldn't there be something on Sesame Street or something that shows that that's okay, and that there are kids that come up like that, just like there's kids that come up with a single mom, there's kids that come up with a single dad, there's kids that come up in family services, there's kids come up in orphanage. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, so why not?
Well, it's interesting because I think about that, because he's obviously on in this area. Now, we'll say he's the television, but I know of, now I'm going to say openly, gay people, because in the office we knew people mm-hmm. in radio.
Mm-hmm.
I knew of openly gay people who worked for the newspaper.
Right.
And openly, now this might blow people's mind, openly gay people who are on city council
mm-hmm.
right in this town. But if the majority of the general public knew it, I never felt that the general public knew it. And if they did, unfortunately, I think it would have impact.
Well, I always look at it like this here. If you're open about your sexuality and people don't know it, it's not because you've hid it from them. And that's their fault for not being connected, if it's that important to them. But open to me means if you ask me, I'll tell you. And I've told other people, and I don't mind people knowing. That's open. But everyone doesn't know everything about everybody. And for them to be on city council and to be open really gives me a lot of respect and admiration towards the city of Marion, because if you know, a lot of people know, because you basically are the voice of Marion. And so if you know, other people know. And for them to be on city council means this is the kind of community that I wouldn't mind living in. You know, when I took the head coaching job at Oberlin College, we were the first ones to hire an openly gay athletic director in Mike Muska. And during the interview process, Muska asked the interview committee, said, well, I'm gay and I'm openly gay. Do you think that that would hurt your recruiting? And my natural response, I didn't think about it. I said, if a young man chose not to come here and play for me simply because you're gay, he's not the kind of young man I'd want to build my program around. Well, when I made that statement, Mike, being openly gay, he put that out in the gay media. And then there's a picture of me and a quote of me in the gay paper. I felt very secure. I felt good that I was defending them. Well, the next thing I know, ESPN comes and we're playing Wittenberg. And so they asked us to sit up in the stands and hold a conversation while the women were playing because the men played next. I had no problem with that. People said, don't you feel uncomfortable? Uncomfortable about what? What do I feel? Well, you know, people might think. I said, I don't care what people think. I said, I know who I am.
You know, it's interesting. I think I told this story, but I want to tell it again because I think it's in these lines. A few years ago, I got a lot of good attention nationally when I did the first interview with the late Helen Thomas, mm-hmm. after she, Dean of the White House Press Corps, if people don't remember her, because she made some comments about Israel.
Mm-hmm.
She told Israel to get out of Palestine, was mm-hmm. essentially, and they fired her mm-hmm. and put her away. And I did the first interview with her, and it got a lot of attention nationally on CNN and Fox News and all this. And I'll never forget, people started to say, kind of hush-hush, that I was anti-Israeli, which mm. to them meant anti-Jewish,
mm-hmm.
because I would interview this woman because they made her so villainous. But to where it got to the level was we had former, and honestly, I never thought about it at the time, but the late mayor of New York, Ed Koch,
mm-hmm.
I had him on after the interview because it got so much attention, we did a lot of shows on it. So we brought Ed Koch on, and I'll never forget this, and Ed Koch was, of course, Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Never entered my mind, and of course, he was not for what Helen Thomas said, very mm-hmm. anti-Helen Thomas. And I said, but should you lose your job for something you say off the clock? That was the question to Ed mm-hmm. Koch. And Ed said, well, let me tell you this. He said, if there's a newspaper that prints the N-word, and we all know what that is, he said, would you buy that newspaper? And I said, now my exact reply to him was, I'm doing the interview. I'm not going to answer that. This is not about me. Now, of course, I would. You don't do that. You don't put that word anywhere. It's a very derogatory word. But because I did not answer him,
mm-hmm.
I got hate mail for being anti-African American.
Well, let me sum this up to you in a way that I sum things up for myself. I'm a God-fearing man. I believe in God. And the most perfect person to ever walk this earth was Jesus Christ. And even Jesus Christ didn't please everybody. They nailed him to a cross. So the moment you think you can say anything and please everybody, it will never happen. And anybody that pleases everybody, I call them a chameleon, because they adapt to the group of people they're with. They don't have a backbone. So if you have, like Winston Churchill said, if you have enemies, we're welcome. You're doing your job. Because when you do their job, you're going to have enemies. You're not going to ever say anything on this radio station that pleases everybody. But when you say what's in your heart and what you honestly believe and that you are for people, that's all that's necessary. Nothing else matters, because some people are just so negative, they're always going to look at what you didn't do rather than what you did do.
Well, but what may, you know, I was okay with people saying, because I'm not okay with it, because I'm not anti-anything.
Well, I hear you. But I know that.
Right.
You don't have to explain, that to me. You see what I'm saying? And so to explain it means it does bother you.
Well, because no answer was an indictment. If I had said, yes, I would buy that paper, or yes, I support Helen Thomas, then you can make your judgments on me, and I'll be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But no answer was an indictment.
Well, you were interviewing. He tried to turn the tables on you to interview you so he didn't have to answer the question you asked him.
Right.
So you had every right in the world professionally to say, I don't have to answer that because I'm interviewing you. And I think that in the segment that I showed you with Huckabee, he tried to do that to the lady, and the lady said, I'm interviewing you, sir.
Yeah.
You answer my question. You understand? So it's a professional pattern that takes place. That's just being a professional, because some of these professional, not some, all these professional politicians know how to turn the tables on you if you're not ready. If you're a novice, they'll have your head spinning and never answer a question. Just like Trump, as example, has called anyone that disagrees with him in the media is a bully. He set that up. He handpicked the first one he was gonna let interview him. He planted that seed. And so now when you pin him to the wall, everyone comes out and says, the media is picking on Trump. He planted the seed, he nurtured it, and he's using it.
But why is the general public anti-media?
Because the media has misrepresented itself a lot. It has lied to us a lot. In the African-American community, they said there was a shootout in Chicago with Fred Hampton when they killed him. And a media guy went in and showed that there was 200 bullets that went into his room, not out of his room. And how's that a shootout?
Well, you know, but it's funny because...
But the media said that.
I understand. But, you know, it reminded me of something, and it kind of all ties into that story I was telling about Ed Koch. You know, one of my regular guests many times is Dick Gregory.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get any more subversive than mm-hmm. Dick Gregory, to the extent that Dick Gregory, you can't tell him what words to use and not use. He doesn't care what radio station you're on. You're going to have to bleep him, and you know
right.
you're going to have to.
Right.
Because he is going to use the N-word, because
right.
he doesn't believe in saying the N-word.
Right.
He believes in going all the way.
Right.
And a lot of his opinions and comedy is still riddled with ethnic background,
mm-hmm.
which is perfectly fine. And
mm-hmm.
he's doing what he's doing. But he's also, but I went and heard him speak at Kent State,
mm-hmm.
and that was about Kent State. That was about something different. But the funny thing is how could somebody, because this is the public, how could somebody who has Dick Gregory on once every 2 months
mm-hmm.
be so silly to think that a no answer would mean that I was anti-African American?
Can I tell you something
yeah.
my grandfather taught me? The person that attacked you, it doesn't make any sense why they attacked you. Am I right?
That's right.
Okay, so my grandfather would always tell me, why are you trying to make sense out of something that didn't make sense in the very beginning? just let it go, because that's all it is. There's nothing you could say to change those people's minds.
Well, this happened 6 years ago. So honestly, I really
but do you hear what I'm saying?
Well, though,
right. But there's nothing you could say to change your mind, because they came at you. They was waiting for the very first opportunity to come at you.
Well, and that's why I say 6 years, I'm over it now, but I think it is an interesting story to bring up how the media can be turned on by being in the center, mm-hmm. by taking a non-answer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Donald Trump has become an expert at doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, he planted the seed. He planted the seed with that lady, and he called her a hussy or something. And... everybody said he said I felt she was unfair with me. She disrespected me first, and so yeah, I don't apologize for calling her that. So he planted the seed, and now he won't answer a question, and then everyone says that he's paying to say media is not being fair to him. Those people are following; they're making their money by saying that.
Do you think CNN will cave in and give the? Money from that debate to a charity, or do you think they'll tell Donald Trump to stay home?
I would tell Donald Trump to stay home.
What do you think they will do?
The people still watch.
Do you think CNN has the backbone to do that?
It all depends on how many invitations, how much money Donald Trump's giving to him. Because if he tells you to come to his wedding, you come to his wedding.
Come to his wedding. If he sent you a donation, you have to come to the wedding.
Right. So, you know, it's going to be good to see. Now we'll see who really runs who.
Yes.
You got me?
It's very interesting. Terry, do you have something to say?
Yeah, I just wondered, on that debate with Donald Trump with CNN, would you put that up there with the decision from LeBron? I mean, as far as donating the money to charity and stuff? Wasn't that kind of the same thing? I mean,
well, you know, no. Well, see, LeBron's donating his money. He's not telling nobody else that's making money off him where to donate their money. You got me? This is LeBron's money that LeBron is donating. He's trying to tell CNN what to do with their profits, because if I come, I'm going to be the draw, and if you don't do that, then I'm not going to come, and you're not going to make any money. I mean, come on, that's still attention for Donald Trump.
Right, but I mean, to an extent, didn't LeBron have ESPN that way? I mean,
well, ESPN made money. They made a lot of money.
I mean, he sent his to the Greenwich Boys and Girls Clubs.
Yeah, well,
Greenwich is probably one of the wealthiest cities in.
Yeah.
You know, and I just didn't know if there was a correlation there between those two or not.
Well, LeBron's not running for president either. So he's on a different platform than Donald Trump. Donald Trump needs to show that he's willing to work together with people. Could you imagine him going into a Congress, even with a Republican that stood up against him? You know, I mean, is he going to work his way through it, or is he going to bully his way through it? If anybody... Just think, I want y'all to respond to this question. Just think, if Obama had Donald Trump's personality, how well do you think it would have been with the way Obama's been come at?
It would have been much more difficult.
Yes, absolutely.
Much more difficult.
And the general public would have said, get rid of that president, he doesn't know how to work with anybody. Am I right? Because they tried their best to get him to lose his cool so that they could say that. But on the other hand, one guy's getting elevated in the polls by being exactly what, if Obama was, that they would claim Obama was terrible. I mean, that's just my assessment.
What will happen when he's out of office? Do you think he'll be able to get some of these things off his chest?
Oh, I want to read his memoirs. He puts them out. I'm going to read his memoirs. I really am. I mean, I can't wait.
Yeah.
You know, because he's kept his cool. Like when the guy called him a liar in the House, You understand? I mean, that is the most disrespectful thing.
What did it have to do with?
What, to call him a liar? Yeah. It was regarding Obamacare.
Why did it happen to him and has not happened to anybody else?
Well, you want the truth.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with racial issues. You know, that, I mean, face it. Since President Obama has become president, our racial tension has really, you know, it used to be tacit. It's no longer tacit. I mean, it's open. It's right in your face. You know what I mean? And, you know, people, and I think we're frustrated with a lot of people. And you asked me, and I'm being as honest as I can with you. I think that what really frustrated them was that he's very intelligent. He's more intelligent than what they thought. And they couldn't get him to lose his cool. And he didn't blow off at the handle so that they could say, look, he's just like, and he's not that. And so he's handled his cool to the point that they've even shut down an entire government. And he didn't lose his cool. And if anyone's lost their cool, they have. And we're seeing the repercussions of it now amongst the GOP in running for presidential office. I mean, it will never it will never be like it was. The GOP would never exist like it used to. They've had to make some adjustments because it wasn't blacks and Democrats that put him in the office. It was middle class.
Well, it's interesting, and again, I want to get back to this. We've got 5 minutes left in this segment. I do want to let everybody know who's listening that Mr. McFeely will be with us next hour, and Charlie Evers is in. He'll be with us next hour. So we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to be on till 4 o'clock today, and then we are going over to the parade. We'll be in the parade tonight. Satch Sullinger will be there. Terry Tackett.
Can't wait to get that popcorn.
It's going to be something else. Mr. McFeely will be there. Mary Ann Michaels. It's going to be a heck of a night. Again, Crafty Construction underwrote this event, right along with Pesto's and the Best Western Hotel. Mr. McFeely coming up in about 15 minutes, and Charlie Evers will join us, so stick with us. But, Satch, let's talk about Hillary in the last 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
She's starting to lose in New Hampshire to Bernie Sanders. Joe Biden wants to jump in on this thing, possibly. And she had to apologize the other day for this email thing. Is it really a big deal? Is she in trouble?
Yeah, she's in trouble. She's a politician, man. She's not connecting with the people. And, you know, I'm not anti her because she's a female, so I don't want anybody to think that. But, you know, I was against her last nomination simply because I look at how dictatorships are started. You had George Bush Sr. as vice president for 8 years with Reagan, as 8 years. Then you had George Bush, and then you had Clinton. George Bush became president for 4 years. That's what, 12. Then you had Clinton for 8. That was 20. Then you had George W. for 8. That's 28 years. And if Clinton would have been elected president, that would have been 36 years of two sets of pillars running this country. And I think that that's just, it's too close. And I, and the Bushes and the Clintons are real close. And so that be good friends, you think alike. And I'm the first one to remember that Clinton's the one that started NAFTA, which started shipping jobs overseas. And so, you know, I want fresh pillars in that White House. I don't want to get 30-some years of just two sets of pillars in there. And then we have President Obama. And then, you know, Clinton, she was bitter when she didn't get the last election. And I remember how nastily she was because she didn't get it. She felt like it was hers. And now everyone's watching her personality, and I think she's just too much of a politician. I think America's getting away from the politician. And my examples, and I know time's run out, my examples are, is Trump a politician? No. But who's leading the polls in the GOP? All right? Is Bernie a politician? No. You understand what I'm saying? And Lord knows Biden's not a politician. You understand what I'm saying? Because, you know, people are changing from these politicians. It's got that phony, fixed grin on their face all the time and say what they think you want to hear instead of what's really going on. And I mean, Trump's proven it right now. I mean, he says some things are so outlandish, but he got 28% of the Republican vote.
He's going to restore Christmas.
Yeah.
So you got to be happy with him for that. He's going to restore Christmas. That'll be the one thing we'll get done.
We can have a fresh start. The Golden Voice is there.
Oh, yes. Golden Voice. We won't even comment on that. That was something that came through here and kept on going.
Yeah, right. Right.
But, you know, Satch, I don't know if you ever commented on that. I don't remember. With 30 seconds left, what was your whole bit? Just because it did happen here when he came and announced his, and it got attention.
Well, it got attention. It just shows that, you know, this man, you know, he hadn't got his own self in order. He's talking about running this country. And, you know, and it made me be proud of America that anybody could run. But I just shook my head at, you know, be honest with you, I want to know, what are you thinking? You know, and then to elaborate on it, I think Terry asked me to talk about it, and I said, I'm not going to dignify it by even talking about it, because it's a mute point. I mean, he can't even keep his own life in order. How's he going to run my country?
We're coming back in 10 minutes with Mr. McFeely and Charlie Evers. Stay tuned to WWGH Radio.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.